Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Most kids have more homework than in decades past, but they also have helpful technologies at their fingertips. Forget the Encyclopedia Britannica. Google may even be passé. In this age of smartphones and tablets, kids and students of any age can take their pick of dozens, thousands of homework apps out there. Returning to Tech Tuesday is Dan Rockwell. Dan manages the Software Prototyping Center at OSU. He's an app expert. Welcome back to the show, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First, to people listening out there, give us a call real quick if you know of a good homework app and want to share your idea. First of all, Dan, I said thousands. Maybe I was exaggerating. There's just tens of thousands of apps out there. How many of them are dedicated to homework and that sort of thing?
Well, I did a little research, and I read that 14% of all apps are educational-oriented, which is crazy when you think about there's 650,000 apps. So there's a ton of apps.
Wait, 655,000 apps?
Yeah, 650,000 apps total in the App Store. I think I actually was talking to somebody this morning, and they said now it's up to 720,000.
And 14% of that would be thousands then.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Talking probably 100,000 or whatever. I mean, that's a huge amount of apps that are education oriented.
If you're deciding you want to check out the apps, how do you recommend somebody dive in and just to even start to cull the offerings?
Yeah, think in your main keywords, right? What are your main keywords? What you want to do? You want a calculator? You want a reference app? You got to think in those root keywords that allow you to really sort of search those apps in the iTunes App Store. The iTunes App Store is actually kind of hard to search. It's not as flexible as going to, say, Google and saying must-have reference apps for the iPhone. And then you'll see a bunch of different, you know, postings, blog postings of people actually talking about specific apps. That's a little easier, actually, to find apps than to actually go to iTunes.
So part of the revolution is getting access to school and educational materials without having to drag home every book.
Correct. Yep, that's a lot. So you see a lot of e-books, a lot of different readers, you know, for the iPad. You know, the Kindle is surprisingly pretty popular still, I think, in the educational space as well. But, yeah, there's a lot of apps out there that are sort of about, you know, getting all the reference material. And there's a lot of lectures now, more online and more video. There's just more media than there really has been before for education.
iTunes U, right?
Yeah, iTunes U is a huge push. Apple's put a really big sort of redesign on that and really pushed it out. OSU has jumped in, you know, head first into that and really done a lot of work, and it's really going to be pushing a lot more iTunes University education going forward.
I'm talking with Dan Rockwell. He manages the Software Prototyping Center at Ohio State University. We're talking about homework apps or educational apps. If you have a question, if you have an idea for an app, if you use an app and you want to share the idea with the rest of us, come on, share it.
That's
Give
right.
us a call, 614-292-8513. There are thousands of them out there. Help us out. You can also email us at allsides at WOSU or go to Facebook, or you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. One that I really liked when I was reading about it was Evernote, and Evernote Peak especially.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about those?
Well, Evernote is an interesting app. Evernote is like a real big, massive information collection app. Like, you can write all your notes in it. You can take pictures in it. It's really almost like the new journaling app for people in the mobile spaces. And, of course, it's big on the web as well. But you can collect just about anything and everything in Evernote. And then you can, of course, annotate it. And they have a sister app that they've recently bought called Skitch, S-K-I-T-C-H, which allows you to sort of take pictures and annotate. So you see a lot more annotation apps out there. And you can, of course, tag and organize just about anything information-wise in Evernote. It's a really impressive app.
And Evernote Peak turns notes into questions. So you can take your notes, and if you clean them up a little bit, they can turn those around so you can start to quiz yourself on what you were taking notes on in that lecture yesterday.
Yeah, in fact, that's a big category of apps in the App Store right now for education are flashcard-type apps where you take your questions and you write your answers on the back and you sort of sit down and quiz yourself, you know, on whatever's available. So it's great to see Evernote sort of going in that direction as well.
And then there's the Study Blue flashcards? Do you know about flashcards? Is that the only? There's got to be a million flashcards out there.
A million flashcard apps. So you name it. In fact, a lot of them are, you know, there are already flashcard apps for specific educational categories. And then, of course, you can make your own flashcard, like Evernote would allow you to do that with the questions.
So, like, there's Latin flashcards, there's French, there's language, there's math and science and all of it?
Yeah, a ton. Yeah, you can kind of go crazy in that category. If you're a flashcard or I don't know. I kind of sucked with flashcards.
Flashcards are for, you know, some people like to be they like to be quizzed orally versus visually or something like that. So
probably better than going to Wikipedia and just looking up everything.
Right. Well, I mean, that's exactly it. It's a new age. There are other sorts of things regarding to education. One is called My Majors, and I really didn't look into it too deeply, but it did make me think about it. It's an app that helps you try to figure out what you want to do or be when you grow up, or how you can use your education and what kind of different niches it fits into.
Yeah, that's a very cool app. I mean, I think it's sort of like a guidance counselor as an app, sort of helps you define, you know, what you would be interested in. You run through a quiz. And it helps you figure out not only the major, but which colleges would support that major and which career titles that would lead to in the future. And that's cool. I mean, that's almost sort of selling the university and selling the category of interest, which is sort of like the next step in all these, you know, education apps sort of started with the calculators and the flashcards and the reference tools and then the annotation apps. And now we're moving to, hey, let's actually promote this whole category of interest as a major, or this whole college, or these set of colleges, or these MBAs. And that's really where, you know, apps, again, are a universal playground for development. So you dream it up, you find your market of interest of users, you can build it. There's nothing stopping you, so go for it. Now, whether or not it's going to be massively successful is all dependent on the sort of audience that you think is out there that's going to be, you know, standing there waiting for that app. But I think you're seeing more and more people sort of going the direction of like My Majors, where you're actually you're playing a bigger role in sort of promotion.
You know, by the way, for everyone, that's kind of what Dan does. You know, we don't talk about it very often, Dan, because your title is once again so cumbersome. But you manage the Software Prototyping Center at the Technology Commercialization and Knowledge Transfer at Ohio State University. So you help people with prototype apps.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think that we should do a contest to rename my title
yes,
the show
so
that people can really participate and try to give me
because I just want to call you the app guy.
Just rename me the app guy.
Okay. Hey, not to give anybody any ideas, but there are cheating apps out there too. And that's not necessarily that we're referring people to them, but we maybe let parents, especially of minors, know about it.
I thought for sure there was going to be a taboo conversation on the phone here, but I'm glad that you brought it up.
I think it's got to talk about the, you know.
Well, you know, even the general Wikipedia type app is sort of cheating because I think you can blame Google for this because Google it's basically created the instant sort of economy where we want to know information like, you know, now, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously you see it in every app out there. There's all kinds of different apps that basically just, you know, allow you to draw up the information in a second, if that. In fact, you can even cache all of Wikipedia in an app, so you don't even need an internet connection to run it.
There's got to be a Cliff Notes app out there.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of Cliff Notes apps out there. Yeah, I guess we're looking around here. But, yeah, there's a lot of cheating apps. I guess I didn't want to talk too much about education and university.
Well, I mean, is there a concern about plagiarism and that sort of thing and cheating with them? I mean, is that?
You should always consider it. I think that actually there are really, really good detection systems now that actually detect when people actually copy and paste, you know, like, for example, Wikipedia pieces right into a document, like they're writing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really great algorithms out there that go off and say, hey, this looks like text from this exact Wikipedia article.
Right. It cuts both ways.
Yeah, it goes both ways. So for as much as folks could potentially sort of try to cheat, there's a lot of systems on the back end that actually empower teachers to basically see what's actually happening here. And I still feel like teachers, you know, still have the upper hand. They know whether or not you know the content because you have to speak it. You have to have the conversation about it. And we're sort of going toward more competency-based, you know, learning and education, where we're, you know, we're trying to do more real-world, you know, type educational aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't cheat your whole way through college. It's just not, that's not good anyways. You should try to learn something.
Yeah, for all the money you're spending.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that you'll owe at the end of college. An email from Charlie. Charlie writes, there are a variety of interactive apps that are helpful for learning the stroke sequence of Chinese characters. Very helpful if you're learning Chinese.
Yeah, those are very cool. Learning, there's a lot of great education language apps on the iPhone and especially on the iPad too. If you're trying to actually learn the strokes, because you have more room and real estate on that. I like the Chinese ones because I can never figure out all the strokes and all the strokes. All the symbols mean something, which is just helpful. You don't look at it as a bunch of lines. You actually know that, oh, okay, that text was supposed to be a house, and then there's something up here, and then that means something actually.
Right, and if the stroke goes up or down or across, yeah, it's
yeah,
just...
Yeah,
it's,
and
it's...
have you seen that one? There's one app out there. This is probably a cheating app, by the way, but there's really a cheating app, but there's an augmented reality app out there for the iPhone. I forget the name offhand, but you can basically hold it up, and you can point it at a language, and it automatically translates the language in the camera view.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I think it's really cool. It would have helped me in college because then I would have known when I actually got to the end of the book, which I didn't know one time. That was actually at the end of the story, and ended up reading an entire book of short stories, thinking it was all the same. It was one big. I don't even want to talk. I don't know why I bring stuff like that up.
So, in the end, did you just think, "Wow, that was a really complicated story"?
Well, I missed a concert because of it. I thought I had this whole book to read, and I didn't. So I couldn't go to a concert. Anyways, anything else we haven't talked about that you really love that you want to share?
I think probably the big thing is, you know, there's different categories, right? There's flashcards, reference apps. And there's lots of tons of calculators out there. And then probably the big thing that maybe both students and teachers should really realize is there's a lot of online education happening. And for teachers, there's a lot of stuff they can do in iTunes University. They can actually author their own books. They can actually really create their own content, which is really brand new. And then for students, there's just so much online free education out there as well. So granted, not every kid wants to take yet another course, but if you want to learn courses really sort of inexpensively in different areas, there's a ton of online education out there as well. So go out there. There's no excuse not to know anything, so go learn.
Okay. Dan Rockwell, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me,
Dan Rockwell, the app man. He's also manager of the Software Prototyping Center at the Technology Commercialization and Knowledge Transfer at Ohio State University. We'll be right back with more on Tech Tuesday. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
You know, everything has a soundtrack nowadays. Restaurants, the subways, you name it.
Music has always been a method that people use to make sense of their environments and that societies use to kind of develop a collective identity.
What about the economy? I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's got a beat and you can dance to it. The story next time on Marketplace from APN.
Marketplace tonight at 6 on 89.7 NPR News. And support our station right now and register to win an iPad. Our fall membership drive begins soon, and by making your pledge right now, you'll be automatically entered to win an iPad. No pledge is necessary, and entries are only accepted at WOSU.org. The deadline is October 11th. Thank you for your support of 89.7 NPR News. And 58 degrees with increasing clouds today. There is a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm this afternoon, a high of 71. Support for 89.7 comes from United Way of Central Ohio. United Way is working to improve lives and strengthen our community by bringing together people and organizations to address local issues in education, income, health, and home. More information on how to get involved is at liveunitedcentralohio.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Ooh.
Welcome back to Tech Tuesday. Tomorrow evening, about 100 entrepreneurs, investors, and tech executives will be at COSI for the Tech Life Startup Showcase 2012. Joining us now to talk about the event is Tech Life Ohio Showcase founder, Ben Blanquera. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good. So this is the first of these, first one of this?
This is the third year of these.
Okay, third year. All right. Yeah. So why 3 years ago did you think this was necessary?
Well, at a broader level, we believe that Columbus is an incredible place for entrepreneurship and technology. Part of sort of making that happen in terms of creating excitement in this region is creating some visibility as to all the great things that are happening here in this region. 3 years ago, as part of the Tech Tomorrow conference, which is a CIO conference, we said, let's go ahead and create some visibility and perhaps create a bridge for these startups to connect with the CIOs who own budget in order to create first customers. So really the basic notion is let's create a place for startups in our community that sell the businesses to be able to showcase their wares and perhaps get connected with organizations that can become customers earlier than later.
Can anybody go?
Anyone can attend the event. We tend to focus the exhibitors on more IT, web-centric startups.
Right, but anyone, if you're interested in learning about what startups are and learning about the businesses that might be there, anyone could go.
Absolutely, and it's free.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, in Ohio, this is as good as it gets in terms of where the startup activity is.
So where did you get the idea to do this 3 years ago?
We're just sitting around saying, what can we do to help?
And what was your business at the time? How do you figure into it?
Oh, where I figure into this, I've been in, I have a dual personality in that I've been actively involved in the local community on two fronts, both from the CIO, which is the IT community, and trying to drive better implementation, use of and leverage of technology in business, as well as that's sort of the day job. But for the last decade, I've been involved with the local entrepreneur community in multiple functions as a community sort of organizer.
So how hard of a sell was it that first year? How many participants?
I think that first year we had about maybe a dozen startups and 60 people attend. And I attribute a lot of that to where we had the event and sort of logistics around that.
Mm-hmm.
In the second year, we had about 50 odd startups and probably 250 people in attendance. This year, we'll have 65 startups and probably 550 folks in attendance.
And it's at COSI. That's a natural.
Absolutely, it's you know, COSI is a great place to be. That is a hub for things in technology and entrepreneurship, and they've done a great job. It's a great facility.
Can you give me some examples of what kind of connections are made at something like the showcase?
Sure. So an example might be. We've got perhaps a business that, or we've got a startup that is focused on assessing teams, makeups, and individuals quickly so that we can accelerate the formation of high-performance teams in a sort of corporate environment.
Mm-hmm.
What can happen there is that a company called Fascio will talk to the CIO of a large major corporation, and in that CIO, they'll go, that's a problem I'm trying to solve. And they'll talk to Fascio, and boom, there you have it. Fascio has a potential customer.
Where else would they go to make these connections if they didn't have something like this? Because this seems, something like the showcase sort of seems sort of, I don't like to use this word, but old-fashioned, person-to-person contact.
Well, yeah, we kind of believe in sort of that basic notion that at some point you got to talk to someone. And face-to-face is the single best form of making things happen like this. We have lots of online kind of connectivity, but we really believe in the power of people actually shaking hands and looking each other in the eye and making connections.
So tell me about the variety of startups that are going to be there.
Sure. We've got a variety of startups ranging from as we said, I talked about the HR team assessment kind of companies to mm-hmm. companies that help migrate development code for corporations to a startup that has is focused on providing exposure to local music through their app too. We've got a wonderful young lady. Her name is Megan Holstein, who is 17 years old, who's got a startup. She has web apps, Apple apps, excuse me, that she's built that help with kids with autism. So we've got a wide range all over the place.
Just joining us, my guest is Bemba and Claire Blanquera. He is founder of the Tech Life Ohio Startup Showcase. It's in its third year. It'll be at CoSci tomorrow night. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to our link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You can also pick up the phone and call 614-292-8513. If you have any questions for Ben, you can email us at allsides@WOSU.org or go to the Facebook page, post your question or comment there. We welcome whatever works for you. One of those startups that's going to be at the showcase tomorrow night at CoSci is the Dublin-based OnGuardian Systems, which develops software for parents to monitor their kids' online activities and physical whereabouts. And joining us now is Mia McPherson from OnGuard. Welcome to the show, Mia.
Thank you, Anne.
So what about, first tell us about what OnGuardian Systems does. I think it's the OnGuard is what you're going to be pushing at the showcase. Tell us
sure.
about that.
Yes, OnGuardian is our product that allows parents to monitor what their children are doing on all household devices. So that includes their cell phones, their laptops, their tablets, their Xbox, their Netflix, things like that that are in the home. It also allows parents to track children's location using their smartphones.
So when you talk about tracking it, you mean it's a one-stop shop of tracking, because you can track everything if you want to do it all individually.
Absolutely. That is one of the great things about OnGuardian that's a differentiator from some of the other products out there that are geared toward children's safety. Not only can you see what your kids are doing on their phones, such as what websites they're visiting, who they're texting, who they're calling, some of the content they may be creating, but you can also see where their location is, which is very important to have all of those things in one, like you said, because parents don't have a lot of time to be looking at multiple systems, so we have combined everything into one.
And do you need the actual phone or do you need it in your possession in order to do this, or can you do it remotely? I know that obviously you can track their whereabouts with GPS remotely, but what about the rest of it?
Sure. Well, the child would have to have a phone with them in order to track their location, but a parent can monitor their children's activity anywhere. It could be on your computer at home.
Okay.
It could be on your tablet. You could do it at work using your mobile phone and things like that.
Okay. So what about the showcase, about the Tech Life Startup Showcase tomorrow night at CoSci, how does that appeal to you? Who are you looking to sell this to?
Absolutely. Well, we're looking to sell it to the end consumer, which is parents or guardians, or perhaps educational institutions, anywhere that allows children to connect to their internet system.
And who are you going to see at the Tech Life that will help you do that?
Sure. Like Ben said, there's going to be a variety of different people there. Customers from large companies, from other organizations, also meeting some of the other exhibitors there that have some great ideas and things like that. The general public, because it's free, like you and Ben had mentioned, anybody can come and see. And this is going to be the first time that OnGuardian is going to be revealed to the public. So it's very exciting for us.
At this sort of thing, and by the way, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Mia, at this sort of an event, how do you show what you do?
Sure.
What are people going to see?
People can see, at the showcase, like Ben said, there's going to be so many different exhibitors there. So we have a limited amount of space, but that's great because you don't need a lot of space and you don't need a lot of equipment to even use OnGuardian. So we'll have our laptop computer and we'll have our mobile phones and an iPhone, and we can show people how you can generate an event using a phone and how it will show up on the interface so that the parents can see what the alerts look like. Say their child is maybe texting somebody they shouldn't, or maybe they're using words that might indicate risky behavior, such as violence, mm-hmm. Sex, things like that. We can show at the showcase how OnGuardian will actually capture and alert to these events.
So how long has OnGuardian Systems been around? How much of a what What kind of startup are you, Ho?
Well, OnGuard Systems is kind of our parent company. Our product is OnGuardian. We also have another product called Intelligent ID, which is an enterprise system, which has been around a little bit longer than OnGuardian. OnGuardian is brand new. We just started developing it several months ago. So like I said, this is going to be the very first time that anybody can see it in the public. So we are brand new.
Ben Blanquero, how do you define a startup? What do we mean by that nowadays? It sounds like just a new company.
It's a new company. I mean, the typical working definition is there's various stages of startups, but typically for this event, it's 0 to 5 years in age. And typically it's just at pre-revenue or just starting to get revenue.
Okay, pre-revenue meaning they need investors.
They either need investors or they're searching for their first customers.
Okay. And how do you get the word out to them?
We've got a pretty well-connected community here in Columbus in the startup world. And we work with probably half dozen collaborators both in locally as well as throughout the state to get the word out to the different startups in various parts of the state.
Mia McPherson, how else would you market your system? You're saying this is the big first rollout for OnGuardian Systems, but how would you do it otherwise if there wasn't a showcase like this?
That's a good question. This is a great chance, like Ben said, to meet people face-to-face and actually speak with them about it. That is kind of what I'm trying to do as well. Another way to market it is for me to go to these organizations and to people who I think would be interested in OnGuardian and who are interested in children's safety, cyber safety, things like that, combating cyberbullying, all of those issues that are very relevant today. So it's my idea and my theory that if I go to these people and let them know what we have and how we can help, meet them face to face and actually speak with them and show them what we have, that's the idea of behind our marketing strategy.
You know, Ben, I know that it's only year three, but do you see any trends, any changes in who you're attracting this year versus that first year, besides the fact that it's five times as many people or as many firms?
In terms of the types of folks, what we're seeing is just more of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're at this point, I still think we see the folks who have a bias to looking at startups showing mm-hmm. up. I don't think we've gotten the mainstream population to aware of what's happening here. I think if we actually get to that point, we could have thousands show up at the same.
Well, it sounds like it could be a lot of fun. To see stuff. Is it mostly apps now, or what are some other sorts of things?
Well, it's apps, but it's also enterprise grade sort of solutions. For example, there's challenges with as software developers create software. How do you manage all that software? And so we've got companies that deal with managing software fundamentally. We've got an app that we have an organization called Perfect Practice that is all around better physical therapy rehab using an app. So it's primarily internet based, app based, but we have a fair amount that are enterprise sort of solution based.
And it's tomorrow night. Tell us a little bit about what it's from when to when tomorrow night. It's at COSAI, I know.
Sure, it's at COSAI exactly. The doors open at 5:30.
Okay.
They'll open at 5:30. At about 6, we'll make some opening remarks and give people a lay of the land and acknowledge some of our sponsors and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll end at 8.
All right. Well, Ben Blanquero, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Ben Blanquero, he's founder of the Tech Life Ohio Startup Showcase. Tech Life Startup Showcase 2012, it's hard to say, is at COSAI tomorrow night. We'll have a link for you there at our website at wosu.org/allsides. And Mia McPherson, Marketing Manager for OnGuardian Systems, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have a link to OnGuardian Systems as well if you want to learn a little bit more about that. Coming up next, we're going to shift our attention to medical technology and a breakthrough that they're working on at the College of Medicine at Wexner Medical Center at Ohio State University. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Dear Lord, please let this date be good. May he have the wealth of Mayor Bloomberg, the personality of Jon Stewart, the face of Michael Fassbender.
On the next Fresh Air, Mindy Kaling. She plays a single doctor whose personal life is a mess and who struggles to do the right thing in the new show, The Mindy Project. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 59 degrees with cloudy skies. There is a chance of rain this afternoon, a high of 71 today. Rain and maybe a thunderstorm for tonight, a low of 61 degrees. More rain for Wednesday, thunderstorms as well, a high of 75. And when you can't be near your radio, you can still listen to 89.7 NPR News by streaming at WOSU.org. Just click on Listen Now at the top of the page. You can also stream All Sides with Ann Fisher, audio and video, at WOSU.org/allsides. Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Technology plays a very big role, an increasingly big role, in medicine, including the fight against cancer. Doctors at OSU's Comprehensive Cancer Center and James Cancer Hospital are developing an electrical helmet that sends currents of electricity to zap the cancer cells and treat an otherwise untreatable brain tumor. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Cavallari, a neuro-oncologist at the OSU James working on this developing therapy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
NovoCure is the company. It's a commercial oncology company that developed the device. Can you tell us about what it does?
Well, it's a new way of approaching the treatment of these tumors. There's nothing special about using electrical fields in the treatment of, or in the medical field in general. You know, people have been using electrical fields for a long time, whether it's to stimulate heart muscle or nerve tissue or generate heat to ablate tumors. Electrical fields is nothing new. What Novo TTF does is it uses electrical fields at a different frequency that initially was thought not to have an impact on biological tissue, but we recognized, or it was recognized, that when you use electrical fields, you can disrupt the way cells divide. And that's really what active tumors are. Active tumors are cells that are dividing in an uncontrolled fashion. And by delivering electrical currents at a certain frequency, you can disrupt their division.
And can you, when we're talking about this, are we talking about a cure?
Well, unfortunately, with glioblastomas, we don't have a cure. These are very aggressive tumors that, despite treatment, often or typically will grow back at some point. We're looking for ways to stabilize the tumor for as long as we can, importantly, without causing harm to the patient, because we know that a lot of the available therapies today have a lot or have a large side effect burden, and we're trying to get away from these toxic treatments to more palatable therapies that even sicker patients can tolerate.
So once again, this is for patients specifically with recurring glioblastoma.
Correct.
It's the most common yet the deadliest type of brain tumor.
Correct.
I understand. It now, this gained FDA approval in 2011. It's only being used in 15 clinical centers in the country right now. How did OSU get involved?
Well, OSU got involved pretty early on. We were actually one of the sites that was going to test the device that ultimately led to its approval. But when the device did get FDA approval, we recognized it as a potentially a really important tool in the treatment not only of not only on clinical trials, but to the general glioblastoma population. So we sought out to have the device readily available to all patients at OSU.
How many people are using it?
It's a new technology, mm-hmm. so people weren't aware of it at first. It takes time for it to ripple into the community. And being a pretty uncommon tumor, it's sometimes hard to reach those pockets of people. The other thing is, it's such an unusual application that you have to overcome, you know, the usual fear and apprehension with new treatments. So between those two things, it's picking up slowly. I think it was FDA approved in 2011, but really before the product could be rolled out, it took a lot of ramp time. People had to be trained. It wasn't just prescribing a medicine. So it takes time to get this novel technology out, people to recognize it, people to understand what it really is. So it's really picking up steam now. Although it was FDA approved in 2011, it's really gaining steam in the last, I'd say, 4 to 6 months.
Now, this is radio, but for our listeners, can we describe what it looks like?
Sure. There's a couple of different parts to it. The first part is a portable, what we call the electrical field generator. And really, it's a small box. It's probably about 8 inches by 12 inches that fits into a bag, and it's very portable. It's connected to what we call the arrays by wires. What the arrays are is imagine a bandage, or I should say 4 bandages, each with a wire that connects to this electrical generator. And the bandages are placed on the scalp. The scalp has to be shaved. It has to be shaved very close. And
The entire
okay. scalp okay. has to be shaved.
Okay.
And the arrays or these bandages are then placed on the scalp. The placement of the bandages is determined by the position of the tumor. So you look at the MRI and you determine exactly how you want to position these bandages. And again, there's 4 total bandages that are placed on the scalp. Each bandage is about, I never measured them, but I'd say about 4 to 6 inches.
Uh-huh.
So collectively, these 4 bandages cover more than 50% of the scalp, hence the terminology, the hat or the helmet, mm-hmm. because when they're all on, it pretty much is almost like a hat.
And how long does it depend on the tumor, how long they keep it on? Do they keep it on all the time? How do you prescribe it?
So in the clinical studies, it was very clearly demonstrated that the longer you wear the device, the better it works. So the goal is for patients to wear it 75% of the day, which is about 18 hours a day, every day. And we use it indefinitely. So there's not a prescribed total length of time. It's more important how much people wear it on a daily basis. The nice thing about the device is we can interrogate the device and figure out how long patients are using it. And in fact, we do that on a monthly basis. Bottom line is the more you wear it, the better it works.
We're talking about tumor treating fields therapy for patients with recurring glioblastoma. It's a very rare.
Well, there's about 10 to 15,000 cases a year diagnosed in the United States. I usually call it an uncommon tumor, but not a rare tumor.
Okay.
Because they're out there. People are out there with these tumors. But I think we tend to want to compare it to things like breast cancer and lung cancer, which are so prevalent that by comparison, it's less common. But it is not an uncommon tumor.
It's a therapy that gained FDA approval in 2011, and my guest is Dr. Robert Cavalieri. He is from the College of Medicine at Wexner Medical Center of The Ohio State University. If you have a question or comment about this, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there, or tweet us at WOSU. All sides. So let's talk about the risk again. You referred to it briefly. Compared to radiation, because when I think of especially brain tumors, radiation tends to be the thing you hear about the most. Do you not do radiation at all? Do you do this in concert with it? And how do you compare the risks?
So currently it's FDA approved to treat patients whose tumors have grown back after initial treatment with radiation. So typically all patients with glioblastomas receive radiation therapy, usually after their initial surgery to remove the tumor. Generally, the tumors come back at one point, and it's at that stage that we apply this device. Now, compared to other treatments, that's where the value of the Novo TTF device comes in. Compared to other treatments, outcomes are very similar in terms of how well it controls the tumor, except the side effect profile is far less. And it was so in the critical trial that led to its FDA approval, it was compared to best standard of care. And the best standard of care at that stage of the disease is different chemotherapies, often which have a high toxicity profile, especially in someone who's undergone previous radiation and previous chemo. And while the outcomes, again, were pretty similar to the best standard of care, the side effect profile was much better, and that translated into quality of life, which was also assessed in that clinical trial. So the value of this treatment is that patients tolerate it better.
So what are the side effects? Are there any?
There are side effects. The most common that we hear about are scalp irritation. So as I alluded to, these are four bandages that are applied to the scalp.
And they stick?
Correct. They're just like a giant bandage that is stuck to the scalp. And inside those bandages, there's little discs that are connected to the wire. Right underneath those discs, which are about 2 inches, maybe 1 inch each of the discs, you can get some scalp irritation where the skin can break down. Patients don't generally notice it. I haven't heard many complaints about it, but you can get some skin breakdown that we generally treat with creams. What you don't get is the nausea, the vomiting, the changes in the appetite, the fatigue, those more typical chemotherapy-like side effects that we spend a great deal of time trying to manage when patients are receiving chemotherapy.
Is it something that's portable, or are you pretty much at home?
No. This is very portable.
Oh, okay.
So the idea is we want a treatment that will help control the tumor, but at the same time preserve quality of life. And part of quality of life is getting out of the home and being active and doing things. The electric field generator and the battery that goes with it are very portable. We provide a backpack or a little pouch that they can carry these devices in, and you could be out in the community doing whatever you want. Even the bandages that I keep referring to fit very easily under a wig or a hat. And often the only thing you'll see is a person carrying a backpack with some wires coming out from underneath his hat or wig.
And nobody does that anymore.
Right. There you go.
Today. So it kind of blends right in.
I never thought of that.
Bill Brock of Indianapolis was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor in 2009. He's one of your patients. He's been wearing the electrical helmet for about 3 weeks now. Joining us now by phone from Indianapolis to talk about that is his daughter, Joanna Brock. Welcome to the show, Joanna.
Thank you very much.
I understand that your dad's speech has been affected by his condition, which is why you're speaking for him.
Yes.
So what did your family think? What did your dad think when they suggested this sort of therapy?
I think he was probably very grateful for it. I mean, just at the beginning in 2009, even when we realized the severity of the situation, we knew that the steps that we are going to take, but along the way that there would be more development of treatments, as time progressed. So just the longer that we could keep him in his best condition as possible, the better the opportunity to get to use, the more developed treatments and such. And so it was just realizing that this is what has happened. You know what I mean? It's been about 3 years now since we first found out, and I think he was really excited, and he definitely knows that it's brand new. It just came out, and that he's one of the first to use it, and I think he just probably feels very grateful.
With these kind of tumors, Doctor, are they the kind that you don't know you have until it's way late?
Well, that's one of the problems. Often when these tumors present themselves, by definition, they're already problematic. But even when you capture these glioblastomas at the smallest size, most preliminary, just the little...
Just by chance.
Yeah, just by chance. Even when you capture them at that stage, they're very problematic tumors. They can be very aggressive, and even with maximal therapy can cause lots of problems.
So we talked about your dad's speech, Joanna. What were other symptoms of the tumor by the time he started this therapy?
Just his At his job, he used to, he's a deputy sheriff, and he would transport prisoners, mm-hmm. and so he would drive. And for a while, they had taken him off of that duty. They were very accommodating, though, and they gave him a spot in the office to do work, but it was clear that he just wasn't able to do the same work that he was before. Mm-hmm. And then even in the office work, like, some of it would become difficult. He started having trouble seeing, because as we found out, the tumor was pressing on his optical nerve.
Okay.
So definitely his vision, his just ability to get around as well, like his physical functioning, just everything kind of started to slow down a bit.
What was the first sign that there was something wrong? Do you remember? Do you know?
Like back in 2009?
Yeah.
I think it was he has headaches.
Okay.
That was the biggest thing.
All right. So how often and how long does he wear it every day? What's his regimen?
He is very dedicated to it, and everyone around him, we try to help him with that. He probably wears it for 23 hours a day.
Wow.
Like, yeah, he only comes unplugged for very rare occasions because, like Dr. Cavalieri said, it's portable. And so anytime we move around with him, it comes with it. And also because his case is quite severe as well, we want to, you know, to know that the more you wear it, the better it's, you know, going to work. How could you not wear it, you know?
So
I think that's how he feels.
Dr. Cavalieri, can you wear it too much?
We don't know.
We don't know
of any problems associated with it. Some of the concerns that you would have with electrical fields is heat. We've measured, not in everybody, but it's as part of the studies, we've looked out for heat generation. It doesn't generate any heat. It doesn't affect normal tissue, and that's based on studies in animals. We don't see that there's an effect in normal tissue. So from the electrical current.
Right.
So, I mean, other than where you get some scalp irritation, I'm
right.
talking about more of the brain tissue.
Right.
We haven't seen a lot of toxicity at the level of the brain. But again, I'm always cautious about new technologies because it's not until you really use the device in thousands of people that you truly understand what it does and doesn't do.
How do you study someone like Bill Brock? How do you use his experience to learn more about it?
Well, we're very attentive, and I think that's the key. I think
because he's in Indianapolis, so you're talking
correct.
To him all the time.
So we see patients that are wearing the Novo TTF device on a monthly basis, and we're very attentive and collecting information in as standardized as a manner as we can. So we seek to identify certain symptom clusters, and we explore them in greater detail. And then ultimately, if you start seeing a pattern, then you can go back and evaluate something even closer. And that's some of the post-market research that goes on with any new drug or any new device. It's the careful evaluation of patients once a product has been FDA approved. And that's where we're at now. We're looking for problems, and we're cautious to not say, oh, it's not related. Oh, it's not related. Because, again, we're still on a learning curve with this device.
Is this a sort of follow-up, sort of a care that you give? Is something that you can do long distance, some of it? Or does he have to travel here a lot?
Well, the device has to be administered at one of the trained sites. So you have to be at a site that's trained to administer the Novo TTF device. And there's more than 15 now. I think that's what you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's more than 15 now, but still, I think there's still less than 30 in the country. But you have to be followed at one of those sites. And unfortunately, like most things, it's clustered on the coasts.
Yeah.
So people are traveling an hour, 2 hours easily to come for this.
Because we hear about long distance medicine now, and I was just wondering if this was an application or a possible application of it. Let's take a call right now, and then Joanna, I want to get back to you and talk to you about your dad very briefly. Chad in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chad.
Hi. I was just wondering, I think actually Dr. Cavalieri, I think you were my mother's doctor. She was diagnosed in 2001 and actually passed away from a glioblastoma tumor. And I was wondering if now, I know back then they had the steroid treatment as far as to keep the swelling because they caused such swelling. has that gone away with this new treatment? Has the swelling gone away? Because she gained so much water weight from trying to keep the swelling down because the brain's so difficult to get into as far as the treatments of these tumors.
I wish steroids went away. Unfortunately, okay. they are a fixture in this disease that we would all love to see go away. The better you control the tumor, the less your needs are for steroids. So theoretically, as your therapies get better, your need for steroids will go down. So presumably, if this really is working, we're not needing steroids as much. Ask me in a year.
Okay. Chad, I just was curious. Thank you.
Chad, sorry for your loss.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Don in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, about over 60 years ago, there was a fellow that invented that machine, and it was called a Rife, R-I-F-E machine. And they've been having trials on that, and it proved ineffective, and it's just doesn't work as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's hear from Dr. Cavalieri. Do you know what he's referring to?
I do not know what he's referring to. So it's always... There's always subtle plays on the technology. And for example, you know, we administer the tumor treatment fields at a certain frequency. And we now understand that not all tumors and tumor cells respond to the same frequency. So when you compare, for example, a melanoma to a glioblastoma, they need to be treated at a different frequency for maximum effectiveness. Could that have something to do with differences? Possibly. Absolutely. Possibly that could do. Because we saw it in the preclinical models of this device that there was a frequency and a field intensity dependence. So there are some variables that maybe were not accounted for. But without knowing the device, it's hard to say. I would hope that over 60 years, the technology has improved, although the basic idea is an old, old, old idea. I'd hope the technology is a little better.
Joanna Brock, your dad's had been using the device for about 3 weeks now. Have you noticed any differences?
Yes, I think so. I want to think so. He actually, although 4 days after he received the initial treatment, we got all his stuff, we had to put him into the hospital, and he definitely, there was a lot of signs that he just wasn't doing well at all, and they did administer some steroids to him as well, and I think the steroids probably helped kind of bounce him back, but since then we've decreased the amount of steroids he's been getting, and again, with constant use of the treatment, like, he seems to be doing really well, and although, like, I mean, we all say everything takes time, and it has only been 3 weeks. And so, you know, I think it would be, you know, I can't give that accurate of an assessment about it, but I know that it's working for us right now, and he's doing good.
Well, Joanna, thanks for sharing the story, and thanks to your dad.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Joanna Brock, daughter of Bill Brock, patient of Dr. Robert Cavalieri. He is at the College of Medicine at the Wexner Medical Center at OSU. We've been talking about a device that can help treat brain tumors. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.